Christopher Hitchens once wrote that for much of his life, he tried to write as if he were composing sentences to be read posthumously. Hitchens died in December, which unfortunately guarantees that many of us will be parsing his sentences in his most recent book in that way. It's a collection of his final writings which deal with his diagnosis of esophageal cancer, how he handled his sickness personally and editorially, and his reflections on life as a public intellectual. Mortality is published by 12 Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Carol Blue, Mr. Hitchens' widow, to our show today. Hello.
Hello.
He said that a cancer diagnosis focuses your time and makes you realize that it's more rational than you'd thought, more rationed than you'd thought. Other than when he was ailing physically, did he spend his time differently after he received the news that he'd had cancer?
He didn't travel as much. He didn't hop a plane. When the Arab Spring started and the demonstrations were occurring in Cairo, in the square, he wished to be there. Other than that, he was very much himself, a bit more tired, sometimes sad, but he lived much as he had before.
Well, you tell a moving story about the day he was diagnosed. You say that it was also the first day of a book tour, the book tour that brought him to this show the last time.
Yes.
What happened on that day?
He woke up in the morning not feeling well and thinking he was having a heart attack. So his publicist had met him for the beginning of this whirlwind blitz of a publicity day in order to accompany him to a local hospital here in New York, where, without going into detail, by the time they let him go, they realized his heart was fine, but there was some speck in some CT that suggested it was conceivable he might have some cancer, but wasn't clear if it was or where it was coming from. And then he still went on Jon Stewart, and he went to the Y, where he was interviewed by Salman Rushdie and before a crowd of 800, and then we went on to a publisher's dinner. And so he went through with the day as it was supposed to be, but suddenly everything seemed completely different.
After his death, writers, academics, commentators all came out of the woodwork in praise of his writing and speaking abilities. Was that something you welcomed, or did it only make handling his death more difficult?
Oh, no, it didn't make it any more difficult.
Do you think there's a danger that his ideas will be misrepresented or misunderstood because he was a controversial figure?
Well, I think throughout...
I mean, he's not around to answer...
Defend himself, or answer it is a better way of putting it, because he would welcome any kind of argument or attempt to clarify. Throughout his life, there was so much of that out on the net and written, and he never bothered with most of it unless it was a real matter of principle and it was in a publication that caught his attention. So, I mean, the whole idea, for example, that he didn't remain a leftist till the end is preposterous, and yet many people believe that that is not the case.
Well, the reason was that he was such a strong defender of the invasion of Iraq to the end, where others, David Remnick and others, people.
But he was, because he believed that he, you can disagree or not, but he saw it as part of his whole life's political commitment to the liberation of people living under a tyrant. So, I mean, we're not here to discuss that, but the point is, he had lived for so long with misrepresentations, whether it was about a literary figure or a war in the Mideast, that I don't think he would have been that troubled by it, actually. I just think he would...
He had
great plans, as he says in Mortality. He had real plans for his next 10 years.
Do you think he enjoyed stirring things up?
I think he really argued because he wanted to make a point. And he didn't mind stirring things up, and he couldn't bear to leave a misrepresentation unanswered or an interesting argument unargued. But I don't think he courted that sort of thing at all, no.
Although the last years he was at The Nation, he seemed to be in running debates with some of the other writers like Alexander Cope.
Yeah, he was. But, I mean, you know, I loved Alexander, as did Hitch, till always. And in fact, they had an email exchange very shortly before Christopher died, very unexpectedly, actually. The death, I mean, was unexpected. So, but, you know, we never paid attention to Alexander when he started harping like that.
A profile on Hitch in The New Yorker from 2006 mentions that you were working on a novel. Did you have to put it on hold after you received the diagnosis?
Well, it should have been finished before the diagnosis, so no, I don't
well,
think
some
it...
Well, novels do take a while.
Yeah, it is true that it was... a 24-hour undertaking, but that was my choice. I mean, I was able to enjoy my husband, be with my husband in the last year and a half of his life, and a lot of the time as I had, you know, been with him before. So,
well, he often
I wasn't doing much else but Christopher, but that was what I wanted.
But he often talked about all the novelists he admired, Orwell,
yeah.
Kingsley Amis, John Updike, Ambrose Bierce, and yes. many others. But he never – did he ever try to write a novel?
No, he just thought he – I think he would have been actually quite good. But he didn't think he had the stuff. He certainly could have – he would have been able to write the prose, but for some reason he didn't think he had the ability to cook things up from scratch, I guess.
Well, you say he had the prose. He was a
yeah.
very elegant stylist. And
he was also unbelievably funny. And, mm. yeah.
And admiring Kingsley Amis, I'd imagine he had a kind of a Kingsley Amis, at least one of the Lucky Jim.
In yeah, him. I think so, too. Yeah.
Many people.
And who knows if he wanted to write about Proust. That was the next thing he wanted to write about. So that's very sad. So he might have gotten around to a novel, too.
Did he talk through the material with you before he wrote it down?
The Immortality.
Or in general?
Was
there a lot
everything.
Of talking about things over the,
yes,
the dinner table?
Yes, every day, over the lunch and dinner table.
I'd imagine
the
sometimes.
The issues of the day, whatever he was writing his column about, everything. Yeah.
Well, since he had a reputation for sometimes being confrontational, he
yeah.
also had a reputation for being one of the wittiest people
yeah.
around. Did you find yourself having big arguments?
We'd have arguments from time to time, but they were always about issues or politics. So if a child would walk in, you'd have to explain, we're talking about Bill Clinton or whatever it might be. We're not mad at each other.
My guest is Carol Blue. We're talking about her late husband's last book, Christopher Hitchens' last book called Mortality. It's been published by 12, which publishes one book every month. And you contributed an essay of your own to this book. Whenever he comes up, whenever people talk about him, of course, they talk about the fact that he was a committed atheist. He had to deal with that whole thing where people say there are no atheists in the foxholes.
Right. Yes, he addresses it in the book, but it really, it wasn't much on his mind at all, actually. He was interested in literature. He, at the very end, he was talking a lot about various authors and wanted to be brought books. He was rereading novels that he loved. It just didn't come up.
He wrote that the thing about stage 4 cancer is that there's no stage 5.
Yeah. though he was told that some people can be cured, and the progression of his disease, the combination of that and the medical care he received, both, you know, this cutting edge mapping of his genome plus some of the radiation he received in Houston meant that actually the cancer was at bay. He died of a pneumonia.
Mm-hmm. That's not uncommon when you have a weakened immune system. Sometimes it's not the illness that's
yeah.
killing you that kills you, but something else.
Yeah, but it was still, I mean, it surprised all the doctors, and actually it was such a virulent strain that everyone who visited had to wear a mask and gloves and a robe, you know, because there was the fear of contaminating people with healthy immune systems.
How long did he spend working on the pieces in Mortality?
You know, it's hard to say. I know he did an enormous amount of thinking about it and reading in preparation for writing about it. But when he finally sits down to write, it's not a slow process, shall we say.
He was famous for being able to slip away from the dinner table, write a 1,000-word column, and then come back to a dinner party and join in the conversation just as though he hadn't left.
I can attest that's absolutely true. Usually it would be at the dessert hour.
And his friends claim that his first drafts were perfect. Did he just...
Yeah, he never...
He didn't cross out or anything?
No, I read that... I read some editor, or I heard some editor, I don't remember who, well, it doesn't matter, saying he rarely required an edit. He never... It went in clean every single time.
And he was willing to write about everything but sports.
Yes, that is true. And in fact, he wrote about things probably that he wouldn't have thought to write about himself, including this. Mm. He did not necessarily want to write about his illness for various reasons. He wanted to write and read about other subjects. Well, and he also wanted to retain some kind of life in the private sphere.
Well, most of the essays in this book were written for Vanity Fair, weren't they?
Yeah, but the way
except the last one.
Yeah, but the way that there's some additions and it's kind of put together as a seamless narrative, so it's a much different reading experience. Beyond the fact that there's additional writing in here, it's quite different than reading these pieces as they appeared over time.
Although it is painful to read the last one and know that he is on medication, that he's probably in terrible pain at times.
Yeah. But that actually, he rebounded after that and had one of his best dispatches from the doctors and was quite optimistic and had said that he was going to stay in the hospital till he was cured and stay in Houston where we had become temporary residents.
He talks about losing his speaking voice in the memoir.
Yeah.
He likens it to impotence. Many of your husband's fans identified him by his voice, and you also talk about his perfect voice. You're talking about his voice, his speaking voice, not his writing voice, which also was perfect.
I would say they were both close to perfect.
And did one come from the other? There are some writers, you almost can hear them talking when you read them.
And I think with him, in certain cases, you can hear it. But he had the most beautiful, sonorous voice, and it just added to it. It was so expressive. And then, of course, given the complexity and the beauty of the language he used it for, it was something else. Luckily, he was writing this piece about... He did lose his voice for a while, not completely, but it became very high and very soft. And so for the first time, I think, in his life, and certainly in my experience of him, we would be sitting at a big dinner table in Houston with family and friends, and suddenly he was finding it hard to cut into the conversation, which was just unheard of. Luckily, though, he filed the piece, he made the pages came up, he made the corrections, and literally the next day or the day after, his voice popped back, and he had that beautiful Hitchens voice till the very last.
With that subtle British accent. In the final chapter, he said that he'd gotten to read many of the things that others had written about his life, and he called the experience exhilarating, but what he did think about... do we really know what he thought about what his eulogists wrote about him?
He wasn't that interested, but he thought it was sweet. He always was very happy when somebody would write about him.
Well, Salman Rushdie remembers him as one of the two funniest people in the world. Martin Amis remembers him as someone with a love of life. Christopher Buckley, in his review in the New York Times, talks about what a great dinner companion he was.
And a lengthy one,
and,
too.
And what would you say?
I would have to second that. He was one of the funniest people I'd ever met. He was also very gentle and very tender and very kind of sensitive and aware of others. I mean, these are kind of the touchy-feely descriptions that you wouldn't necessarily associate with Christopher if you knew him just... from his public appearances. Uh-huh. And he was just an incredible lover of life.
Well, that comes across in his last book, which is a collection of essays and writings called Mortality. It is published by 12. And my great thanks to Carol Blue, his widow, for coming by to talk about it.
Thank you. What that it were called immortality.
Well, there's an immortality for every writer.
Yeah.